Here's another story about self-identity and how it can be changed. From time to time, we feature excerpts from This American Life, a national weekly radio program from WBEZ in Chicago. This story is from a recent edition about changing your name. Here's the host of This American Life, Ira Glass.
When my grandmother, Molly Politzer, was just 32 years old, she got sick. So sick that she was in the hospital for months. So sick that the doctors thought she would die. So sick that finally, when all else seemed to fail, they called for a rabbi, and he changed her name. As my mom explains,
the reason the rabbi said that they changed her name was so that when the angel of death came, that he wouldn't, you know who she was, and he would, you know, wouldn't take her.
It's such a beautiful picture of what the angel of death is, that the angel of death could be so easily fooled.
Mm-hmm.
The angel of death is stupid.
Well,
the angel of death is like the UPS man. Well, it says here the address. So I've got the name.
Right.
Are you sure she's not here?
Well, it's sort of like if they put the wrong name tag on you in the hospital, then you get the wrong operation.
So my grandmother changed her name to fool the angel of death. And it worked. She survived, got well, changed her name back to what it was, lived to the age of 87. There's something so medieval about this story. So unlike my family, actually, my family, which basically discarded the old world, you know, the day that they got off the boat. But I think it's easy to believe that there's something magical when you change your name, you know? You change your name, you become a new person. You take on a different identity. You start over again, clean slate. You know, in a way, it's a very American impulse. It's the new world. It's the move westward. It's divorce and self-help and 12-step programs and Ellis Island all rolled into one. It's the story of Marilyn Monroe and Andy Warhol, Muhammad Ali and Malcolm X, and the artist formerly known as Prince. In Los Angeles, to legally change your name, you show up at the L.A. Civil Courthouse at 5 minutes before 9, Thursday or Friday, and go to room 208, Department 1A. It works like this. You file a petition to change your name that costs $189. You pay about $85 to publish your name change in the newspaper. If you're changing your kid's name, you need to prove that it's okay with the other parent, or prove that you have searched for the other parent and you cannot find them. And you have to fill out a form, so they can check and make sure that you're not a registered sex offender.
Imagine a line at the Department of Motor Vehicles. That's what this line looks like. Several teenage girls in white or black jeans, long nylon coats, heavy makeup, and long, long crimped hair. A few couples stand, holding hands, and look to each other for assurance.
We sent writer Margie Rockland to watch the proceedings last Friday. 17 people showed up. There was a youngish black guy with an afro, baggy plaid pants, and a battered briefcase, changing his name from Damon Washington to Damoni Ide Sativa. A Vietnamese man named Sunny Tay Ang changed his name to Sunny Thomas Wu. A school teacher named Carol Ann Anderson became Deva Kaur Anderson. Her yoga teacher gave her the name. It means angel princess. But more than half the people who come here are mothers who want to change their children's names. Apparently they don't want to be reminded of the ex who isn't around. We asked Margie Rockland to describe the scene, what she saw when she visited.
Even without being told, people follow the rules of any legal proceeding. If they speak, they speak softly. For 15 minutes, I sit in this room watching a line of people, one after the other, speak to the court clerk, a young woman who looks a lot like Kim Goldman, Ron Goldman's little sister from the O.J. Simpson trial. Mostly, the court clerk asks and answers questions. She examines their papers and says things like, "Are you his mother?" The minutes tick by, and each of the people are addressed in the same kind, helpful tones, and then they walk out the door. And then at a certain point, I realize something. This is it. There's no more to this proceeding. In my mind, I'd imagine that the filing of the papers was going to be followed by some kind of swearing-in process, like the kind that happens when you become an American citizen. I pictured a group of people standing up with their right hand raised and a judge banging the gavel and then making them repeat some official oath, although I'm not sure what that could be. I, new name goes here, solemnly swear that I will answer to my new name and no other, so help me God. Where the judge sits, there's only an empty chair and a nameplate that says Murray Gross, Commissioner. Later, I ask the clerk why the judge isn't around, and she says, oh, he is. He's been here all day long. He's in the back. And then she waves her hand in the direction of a room behind her. The thing is, I look through the open door, and I only see a secretary wandering around. And immediately, I think of the great and powerful Oz. There's no Murray Gross, I think. In Los Angeles, if you want to get your name changed, you deal with this clerk. Her name is Robin. She's a temp. About five deep into the line, there's a tall, thin, elderly woman with a fuzz of gray hair who stands as patiently as the rest. She wears all white, a long white sweater, white sheer stockings, white shoes, and an ankle-length, crisply ironed, pleated white skirt. There is something about her that immediately catches your eye. She's the only one in line wearing a crown, a beaded one, gold and blue. This is Her Holiness O'Brien. Her name used to be Olivia, she tells me, but in 1981, God told her to change her name. She wouldn't say why. To Her Holiness, and she respectfully complied. Ever since then, everyone at the retirement home where she lives calls her Her Holiness, or nothing at all. What do they call you for short, I ask her, and she smiles dreamily at me. That's it, no answer. Her Holiness has definitely dealt with bigger smart alecks than myself. Somewhere from the folds of her all-white costume, she pulls out a small black leather wallet, and she shows me her Social Security card and her driver's license, and they both say, Her Holiness O'Brien. Then she slides the cards back into the wallet, adjusts her crown with a tiny tap of her long, skinny fingers, and then she disappears off down the court hallway. Watching this whole thing, it's hard to believe how simple it is to change something that has been so much a part of your life for so long. Something that seems irrevocable. This thing you've had since birth. And when they walk out of the courtroom, people have an expression that I've only seen in one other place. It's the "what just happened" expression of newlyweds after they've been married in a quickie wedding in Las Vegas. So much anticipation has come before this. So much thought has been invested on the road to this moment, and it all happens so quickly, they don't know what to feel. They assume they're going to feel different, but they don't feel different, just numb. Sometimes they actually say it out loud to Robin. They lean towards her and whisper, "Is that it?" "That's it," she says, moving on to the next applicant.
Morgie Rocklin is a contributor to This American Life. The program is hosted and produced by Ira Glass.